Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Tunnel Vision, a show brought to you by USCFootball.com. I'm your host, Keely Orr, joined alongside Shotgun Spratling and Ryan Abraham, those two little misfits over there.
Misfits.
And we're not little, we've been big misfits, if anything.
Whatever, I'll characterize you how I want to. Today, we're going to be talking about USC's 38-21 victory over Oregon State. I'm fresh off the plane from Portland, which is good, made it back for the show. We'll be talking about a much-needed win that USC got. We'll also be talking about injury updates. Seems like the Trojans got a little banged up in Portland. We just heard from Clay Helton on his conference call, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about, are there defensive concerns after a performance that we saw last night?
A lot of tweets, people are, like, upset people with Clancy Pendergast's defense, yeah.
Yeah, people are a little feisty.
There's been a game where people aren't upset.
No, there's upset about everything. Before we jump into it, yeah. I love the people that are upset about the running back situation. Before, it's like, why aren't they running Stephen Carr more? Then, why aren't they running Vavai Malapaya more? Then, why aren't they running Akasar? It's like, whoever is not running as much, that's who they're complaining they should be running more. So, it's
never pretty
happy. Good. They're all three good. So, it's you have good problems there.
Yeah. We're going to sneak peek into what we're going to talk about. And, of course, we will be answering your questions. I believe we are trimulcasting on YouTube, Facebook Live, and Periscope. So make sure you get your questions in. We'll be monitoring those.
My buddy Sean Canale's on Periscope. I watch him. Hey, Sean. He said hi on there.
Well, there we have it. Okay. You guys got to watch it on the broadcast version. What were your guys' takeaways from Oregon State? I mean, this was a win that USC definitely needed. If they didn't, it would be disaster, apocalypse, doomsday. But it was a goodish win. But how much do you take away when the opponent is Oregon State, which is not the toughest competitor?
Yeah, that was a big thing on social media. If you're watching or on the message boards, it's kind of like tempered thing. And it's funny, I had people complaining, like when I would say, oh, Oregon State had a nice drive or something. I had someone complain actually about you and me. Well, why are you in shotgun always just complaining about the team? Why are you even covering them? And then other people were like, oh, that was a great play. I would say like, oh, that's a great play or something. And be like, it's Oregon State. They're terrible. Don't compliment them. So it's funny you get it from both sides. You're either being too positive or too negative or whatever. But I think it's a road win, not just a win away from home. It's a road win. And USC had lost two in a row, something that they needed to do. There was some significant changes. They had to show, hey, the offense could still work without an offensive line coach or moving Tim Drevno over or not having a running back coach or however you want to look at it. I think they showed, hey, this team can work. They looked pretty good against a Oregon State Beaver team that can be a little feisty at times. You know, we saw them win on the road to Colorado. We saw them feisty when they scored the 21 straight points or whatever it was. Like, that was pretty good.
True.
They had some pretty good defensive plays at times. And then other times, it's basically when USC started to just throw the ball only. That really helped the Oregon State defense. When USC said, hey, we're just going to run the ball, there's really nothing they could do. And it was the point where I just tweeted, like, never throw the ball again. Just run the ball. So you saw the talent disparity. And I think it was pretty apparent, you know. But I think USC took care of business. They did what they needed to do. I'm not on board with all the fans who are like, oh, this is terrible. It's like, hey, no, this is what was needed. Now you're going to play a tough Cal team. But for this game, it's like, I think it was fine.
Yeah, they fixed a lot of things by playing Oregon State. That fixes a lot of things. So the biggest takeaway from this game, though, is the offensive line opening up some holes. I mean, there was some very big holes to run through. The running backs ran really hard too, you know, after there was contact. But there were a couple of those long runs that were not touched at all. Stephen Carr's first touchdown run, not touched, getting in 8 yards. And, you know, really good performance by Chris Brown. He graded out really well as a top rated USC player from the game, offense or defense. Toa Lobodon did a really good job on, you know, sealing some of the plays that Stephen Carr run. There was a long run, but from one of the Akacentric Ware really long runs, did a really nice job of getting outside of a block and then pinning a guy inside to open up a big lane for him. And Clay Helton said that Austin Jackson and Chuma Adoga, the two tackles, he said they had their best game of the season. So I think that's the best thing to take out, or the most important thing to take out of this, is the offensive line played well. They were getting a push. You know, USC did some different things. They went under center. They used a fullback on short yardage, you know, using Vi and handing the ball off to him in short yardage situations. So they did some different things there. They went forward on the fourth and shorts and got all those. They were really good on third down.
Really good, yeah.
Because they ran the ball well on first down. It was a lot of times it was second and four, second and five, rather than being second and 9 or 10 or 12, you know, which has been the case a lot, you know, in the past with the running game. So I think that was the biggest thing for USC for their offense in this game was their running game was really good, and then started with the offense line.
Yeah. I think they picked up like a 3rd and 15 or something on a running play. Like
it was 3rd and 16, and they picked up 15 yards to give it 4th and 1. And like, I guess we'll go for it here.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of crazy. The first like 8 or 9 third downs, USC either converted or then picked it up on 4th down. It was pretty crazy, like a very big difference. So some really good things. USC had 332 yards rushing. Oregon State had 332 yards. So it was pretty, you know, in a 10-to-1 rate, like it was like 31 yards rushing for Oregon State. So that's what you want to see. Yeah, give up some points. Yeah, but I mean, I thought it was fine. Like, you just don't look too much into it. It is Oregon State, but USC needed something like this, and they got it.
Yeah.
And I got a stat for you guys. I looked this stat up using Pro Football Focus as numbers. So USC had 353 yards on design runs. So that's all the running back carries, 353 yards. 162 of those yards were after contact. Pretty good number for USC. That's really good. But that means they had 191 what I'm going to call created yards. So that means you get 191 yards before someone touches you. That's what that's offensive line is creating, yeah. 191 yards in this game. So I looked at all the other games. USC for the rest of the season has 309 created yards. So they averaged 38.6 created yards per game. So the offensive line has been creating 38 yards a game. This game they created almost 200. So that shows you the offensive line had a really good game.
Right. And Oregon State's pretty terrible.
Well, why did the offensive line have such a good game?
Yeah.
Probably because Oregon State's not very good up front. But I give credit to them. You know, that's obviously a tough week to go through. It seemed like they had a spark in practice and stuff. You know, it seemed like they were fueled by that to come out and perform. Good for them. Can they build on it? That's the question. Now, Cal, obviously, much better defense than Oregon State. And Cal's been playing really well. I mean, they just held, you know, Washington State, they lost the game. They held them to 19 points, late touchdown.
On the road, 19 points. And, you know, the week before, it was 10 points to Washington. So
yeah, so their defense played really well.
I mean, this is a really good defense. Even Cal's offense is awful. We can get into that in the preview show. I mean, I've been watching them. It's like they're ridiculous. But they scored 49 or something against Oregon State. So you can score on Oregon State. So it's good. I think it's good for USC. Going to be a much bigger test this weekend going forward for homecoming.
Yeah. 7:30 kickoff.
Yeah, we know
it's
about
it. It's
going to
be a late night
again.
For us again, not yeah. Ryan. He's gonna be.
I'm taking this weekend off, so I might tweet a little bit from the stands. But this is my 25th reunion, so I'm old. But yeah, so and I'm on the reunion committee.
Wow, look at
and,
you!
And yeah, so we're having. I'm doing the tailgate, so this will be the first like Coliseum game I haven't like worked. I don't know how long. Just, you know, weird.
It's been a little bit, but sorry, I was thinking.
Do you remember this like a time when?
Yeah, I 2016 in the beginning. I think he had surgery.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, not, yeah. Okay, well, I mean, like, not like going as a fan. Or
not that
yeah.
anyone needs to know this. But yeah. As far as this win, Dan and I said in instant analysis, it's good to get a win, however you get a road win, especially with the drama that happened this week. Get a win. But what happens is how you respond next week. And part of that is because, I mean, we opened the show last week saying USC's Pac-12 South hopes were all but gone. And now we're coming back on this show saying, there's still a chance.
Yeah.
I mean, USC has the easiest schedule, quote unquote, going forward against Cal and UCLA. They need Utah and ASU to win one each, and they both play Oregon.
Lose one each.
Lose one, thank you. Yeah. So, I mean, they still have a shot. Isn't that pretty crazy?
They could be the favorite. Arizona State is the only team, I believe, that controls its own destiny. But they're, you know, they have actually 3 conference games left, where a lot of the other people only have 2. So it's definitely doable. Obviously, you got to win both games, and the Cal game will be the toughest. UCLA can be a little feisty, but they've just had they've just done some horrible things. Like, their special teams were awful, awful. They ran up.
I saw your tweet about this. I was like, what?
Yeah, like what David Woods was talking about it. They went out for a field goal and didn't have a kicker. So it was like.
Seems like an important part of the situation. I don't know.
But they don't know. Like, they had so many bad special teams plays and stuff.
I mean, USC doesn't even do that. They might go and take the field with 10 players, but they at least have the important ones, like the kicker and the holder.
Yeah. So UCLA, like, that's. But it's a rivalry game, and, you know, Chip Kelly might have them really up for that. But Cal, like, for real, legit, played Washington State 2 weeks in a row and gave up a total of 29 points. So both The only two touchdowns Cal scored the last 2 weeks were by defensive players. One was a pick six, and one was that, was it Malik, what's his name, Malik? I forget his name, but he's the big number 99 guy that they run as a fullback sometimes, throw him a pass. So
the
only two touchdowns they've had were defensive players. So it's not like this is a great offense, and they mix up, we'll talk about that next time, but really good defense. So USC is going to have a much tougher task. They're not going to be able to run like Swiss cheese like you could through the Oregon State defense.
True. Our preview show is on Thursday, so make sure you watch out for that. But you kind of alluded to some changes we saw as far as the offense goes. This is Clay Helton's first game back as play caller. What did you guys see, if anything, changes in the scheme?
It's kind of hard to tell because, like you said, it's playing Oregon State. But it did, at first, it seemed like it wasn't as, it didn't flow. I don't know if you felt that on the field. Like, plays weren't really getting in there quickly. You wanted to get in quicker because he's already on the sidelines. But then I think they ran more tempo stuff and it seemed to flow better. So maybe it just took him a little while to get used to it. But I thought it looked fine. But he said it on the conference call this evening. Like, it's a lot easier to call plays when the running game's working. So when you can just hand the ball off and just you pick up a whole bunch of yards, like, second and two is, I like calling plays for second and two.
I mean, third and 16, you pick up 15 yards just by handing the ball. And they did that a couple times where they picked up lots of yards on third and longs. And they're like, that's something USC maybe has done once this year on third and long where they've handed the ball off. And I don't know if it's just that they had confidence that they can pick up those yards or it's just like, we're running the ball, let's just try it type of thing. Because that's, third and 15 or something, that's – a lot of times you'll see screens, you'll see draws, that type of thing. Especially in the SEC, they really like to run halfback draws on third and long. You don't see that from USC. But today, they just went with their regular offense, and they were tearing up the Oregon State front. So they're just like, let's try it out. And Stephen Carr picks up 15. They go for a fourth down and get it, continue to drive, and they score. So one of the craziest things I saw, when looking back through the stats was that first drive was 18 plays.
Yeah. Six first downs on that first drive. Like,
sustaining
no way.
Drives.
Yeah.
USC.
Yeah. The sustained drives, but six first downs. Like, there's no way they've come close to that this year. And there wasn't a lot of tight end involvement, which I would have liked to see in a game like this, but there was at least a couple like screens or swing passes out to running backs.
We did see Eric Cromanhook.
He did come in to block, right?
Yes.
He could block.
He played like probably 10 to 15 plays. I haven't charted yet, but he had only played one offensive snap the last 2 weeks. So he got back in there. You saw Trayvon Sidney play a little bit. He
had
not played at all the last 2 weeks. So they used some more bodies. Obviously, with Michael Pittman going down, you saw Devin Williams a lot more. Devin Williams had a really nice game. Leading receiver for USC. He had his first catch.
Yeah.
First touchdown catch.
He was leading the team in like yards or something. At
he
some
did
point
lead
too.
In yards. He did finish the game. He had three catches for 77 yards, I think.
The fact that I've been saying all year is like, just get him a short pass, and if you do that, it'll open things up for the deep passes.
Keely's
not paying attention.
I've been saying.
Sorry, I'm monitoring.
That's okay. You missed my joke.
Oh, funny.
No, Shotgun has been saying that because we've seen very low percentage passes to Devin Williams and critical situations. Like, why are you throwing him the ball when you really need a catch? And you've definitely been saying, like, just dump a little off to him and let him run by some people. Once they did that, it seemed like the floodgates opened. Now, Michael Pittman was out, but it helped.
Yeah, so, I mean, every pass that he had before this game had been a deep ball. His first pass in this game was a deep ball. And then they throw him basically a 7-yard stop route or 6-yard stop route or whatever it was third and five or six or something like that, picks up a first down, and then a couple plays later they throw the deep ball and it's there. And actually you saw him on that first deep ball where he kind of slowed down a little bit, and JT talked about it after the game. I watched Keeley's interview with him that said, he basically said, if it's press coverage, I'm coming back to you, get out there, nobody can stop you in press cut. Once you get by him, you're running by whoever. He said, I'll do a quicker fake so I can get it out in front of you a little bit quicker. And he did that. It was perfect throw by JT on that ball. It was pretty good. Not great coverage. It was pretty good coverage.
Yeah, yeah.
The DB was there, and he just dropped it right in the breadbasket, touchdown. And he later, I think at the beginning of the second half, he had a nice catch, where he catches the ball on the move, and he picks up another 15 yards or so after the catch. So doing some different things then besides, okay, well, he's big and he's fast. We're just going to throw deep balls every time until it works.
Right. It's like playing hoops. Like, you want to get that first basket, whatever. If it has to be a free throw, whatever it is, you get something to go through the hoop once, and it's like you feel more comfortable doing it.
And obviously it helped because he was getting more plays because Michael Pittman was out.
Yeah.
The severity of that injury, still to be determined. Clay said that he's going to have an MRI on it, I guess, tomorrow, which does not sound good for his immediate availability on his shoulder. So, you know, Keeley, what did he kind of look like on the sideline?
He looked a lot. He was definitely in a lot of pain. I heard from people on the sideline that he was crying. He left in the first quarter and then didn't return until halfway through the third, which makes you think that he was going through maybe tests or x-rays or something of that sort. So that was pretty bad. Stephen Carr as well, he was super gimpy. He was trying to get to the trainer's table and actually had to be carried to the table and then was eventually carted off. He did leave with the boot. Gimpy, that's a Helton said it was a significant ankle sprain. So those ankle sprain. So those are two major-ish injuries, but we'll get an update later in the week. But
yeah, the two big offensive players, obviously Michael Pittman and Stephen Carr. And then there's some concern in the secondary, too, as far as, I guess this is our injury updates section.
Yeah, it is.
Injury updates coming. Iman Marshall had an ankle sprain as well. He played really well. I think I retweeted him today. Like, someone asked how many, I think it was Rich SC asked, like, how many passes he had given up or something. You know, and the numbers were pretty good as far as what he did. But it's pretty banged up secondary. Clay Helton said, you know, they could move some guys around. You've already moved Jonathan Lockett, who could play corner. And you have him at the nickel spot because you had to move Ajani Harris to the safety spot. But if you're down another corner, because Greg Johnson also, what was his
shoulder injury?
And Lockett actually played corner during parts of the game, which is they moved everyone around. Yeah, so it was a lot.
There's just not a lot of bodies in the secondary now. You had that run on safeties. Now you get a little bit of run on corners. Obviously, like, you know, Jack Jones, there's some departures. There's people getting injured. So it's sort of a mash unit in the secondary right now.
Yeah.
Now, Cal's not like the greatest offense in the world, but certainly you'd like to have a few more healthy bodies if you could.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, looking at it right now, with, you know, Iman Marshall left with an ankle injury, Greg Johnson left with a shoulder injury. If you count those guys as injured, USC currently has two scholarship safeties, Marvell Tell and CJ Pollard. They have two scholarship nickelbacks. These are healthy scholarship nickelbacks in Ajani Harris and John Lockett, and one scholarship cornerback in Isaiah Langley. And he's the guy that's getting picked on the most right now from you know pass attempts and stuff. So the question is, who do they get back this week? Elijah Griffin didn't travel on the trip. Could he be back this week? He practiced some last week. Isaac Taylor Stewart's out of the boot. You know, he's walking around a little bit, but he hasn't practiced at all, so don't know if he's going to be back. Is Iman Marshall going to be back? Is, you know, can Greg Johnson come back? Greg Johnson, I saw in the back of one of the videos, you know, walking by, didn't have ice or anything on his shoulder, so hopefully that's a good sign for it. He only played a couple of snaps. And then the question becomes, if no one else is healthy, are you going to play those five guys, which you probably will? That means C.J. Pollard goes in at safety. Ajani Harris moves back to one of the cornerback spots. So now you're limited on what you can do. Because Oregon State in the second half and, you know, that the two-minute drill that they ran at the end of the first half, they were going five wide a lot of the times. USC, I don't know, they did not go. They stayed in the nickel, which meant John Houston and Cam Smith were still on the field. I don't know if they felt limited enough. You know, they're like, I don't think we can dime, which is something they practiced, you know, before, is dime, where you have six defensive backs. It's kind of like, well, can we go dime? So maybe you look at, you know, okay, they've given up a bunch of those passes, and maybe that's because some of those passes were against linebackers, and they have to play a little bit more zone coverage because you got linebackers. You know, the touchdown pass that they had, I think right before the half, was Kenai Mauga was having to guard it. It was the offensive, you know, outside linebacker having to, you know, go outside and try to guard somebody. So there's some things there where the defense was a little bit limited, I think, in what they could do. So how much of those injuries play a part going forward, you know, didn't hurt you against Oregon, or it hurt you against Oregon State. Didn't affect the outcome of the game, but will it against a team that, like Cal, that's, you know, playing really good defense? We'll see. And we'll see who's back. You never know who's going to be back until Tuesday for sure. So,
how often did C.J. Pollard play? How much did he play? Do you know?
Going by pro football focus stats, because I've not done my charting yet, he played four snaps. Now, he had a sack on one of those sacks, on one of those snaps. So,
they still don't really – I mean,
it just doesn't seem like they trust him as much as they trust Jonathan Lockett. That's kind of the dilemma. Is like, do you put, you know, if you put CJ in, you're going to move Ajani Harris down in that nickelback spot. So it's kind of a question: do you trust the fifth year senior in Jonathan Lockett, who's playing really well right now, by the way, or do you trust CJ Pollard? Because Ajani Harris is obviously the guy that they trust probably the most as far as any of those defensive backs, you know, even though you got really good guys in Marvell Tell and Iman Marshall, is they trust him as a coach on the field to, you know, to be the guy, because, you know, that he's the guy they want on the field the most. And so they found a way to put him on there with the injuries at safety. So it's down to Lockett versus Pollard in that regard.
And Clancy Fingergut said after the game that they're going to stick with Ajayi at safety and then Lockett at nickel. So going forward, unless...
I would assume that means he has two healthy cornerbacks, because if he doesn't,
yes,
then,
that's what I was saying. Assuming going forward that they have healthy cornerbacks. I'm actually going to go do a question now that will address some of the defensive questions we had. Corey says, I generally like the aggressiveness of Pendergast's defense, but why in the world did they not have a way to stop the short slant passes?
We had on Periscope 2, Todd MYR. Can Clancy learn how to defend the receiver slants? Oh, my gosh. And then someone said, blink twice if Ryan is already talking in circles. But we'll go back to, I don't know if I was doing that already.
I'm sure I have already.
Yeah, so that was a lot of the social media stuff with people talking about, there's more slants. And that, you know, early on, the first Oregon State drive, they had a couple of passes there, short passes to the sticks. But one of them only went 9 yards, and then they couldn't, second and one, they couldn't get a first down at all. They ended up punting on that drive. So that was kind of momentum. And then, you know, they came down the second drive and missed the field goal. But they were that quick passing game was working pretty well for Oregon State.
Yeah, but also you're forcing a team that's very bad to go the distance against your team that has better athletes. And they gave up, what, 21 points?
Yeah, it was sort of
21 points
bend,
is not great.
Bend,
but
don't break.
Yeah, they basically played bend but don't break. You saw that they were playing more outside leverage with the corners in that situation, you know, funneling stuff towards the middle of the field where the safeties would be. And then when they got down towards the goal line, if you noticed, like right before halftime, I think it was, Ajayi Harris, they tried to throw a fade ball, and he played more inside leverage on that. So I think it was more situational where they were just like, this team's not good enough to be able to constantly do well. And that was one of the drives early, and that probably gave them a little bit more confidence in their game plan. Like, yeah, we don't need to come out of this. Even if they get 9 yards, we'll probably stop them on the next play, you know, if it's third and one or something. So I think that's part of it. When you're playing bad teams, you know, you make them do something good repetitively because usually they're bad for a reason. Usually they'll mess things up. And, you know, they did give up 21 points, but – you know, I thought USC played pretty clean on the defensive side. You know, there weren't that many penalties or anything as far as you know, helping them out. So I think that was part of the game plan. Not sure. I mean, that was something I would have asked Pendergast after the game. But, you know, I think that was part of it. It's kind of that death by a thousand cuts type of thing where it's, oh, come on, you guys, they're doing it every single time. But you would rather do that than have them, you know, Hodgins on the outside is, I think, 6'4". You know, if he's going up against Isaiah Langley, you would much rather give up an 8-yard slant pass and tackle well. And USC did really tackle well in this game. So you'd rather give up that than the potential of the big play on the outside, which I think is what hurt Colorado a lot, was the big plays on the
outside.
Yeah,
they had some big plays. And, you know, Clay Helton said on the conference call, too, that early on they wanted to stop the run. So they knew Jefferson well. They stacked the box in the first half most of the time. Stop the run like that. You know, it was second and one. They ran it nothing. Third and one, ran it nothing. They ended up punting in that drive, you know. So that was the opening drive. Like, that's something that – and USC ended up having that, you know, crazy 58-play drive or whatever it was to score a touchdown. obviously, it wasn't that. But, you know, so I think they did that. And then in the second half, they dropped into coverage a lot more. And I think you saw less success. But USC was also able to get pressure. I think – a lot of times they were stacking the box, and for some reason they weren't getting pressure on the, and they, you know, and Luton was back there being able to deal and pick up some of those, you know, those drives and continue them going. That was tough. I mean, for Oregon State to do that three drives in a row, I think it was three drives in a row. I mean, it was pretty impressive, but USC kind of backed off the, you know, they were stopping the run anyway and dropped back into coverage and was still generating pressure with the front four. You saw John Houston, like, blow up some crazy-ass play that was – that might have been on the missed field goal drive, so I don't remember, but, like, just blessing forward. So there were some pretty big individual plays, 6 sacks overall. So, it was, I thought it was a good day.
Christian Rector was a part of 4 of those sacks.
Yeah.
He got credit for 2.5 sacks. He was really good in this game. Jay Tefele was really good. He was throwing people out of the way like it was nothing. He had 2 sacks in this as well. You know, the running backs and quarterback that were running, not counting Luton's sack totals and not counting, you know, whatever carries he may have had because his long was 2 yards, they had 23 carries for like 76 yards. So if you can get that, you know, especially with the leading rusher in the Pac-12 coming in this game, then that's what you're going to do. You're loading
the
box.
He could never get on track. Yeah.
And that's what Clancy has done. He's always limited. He's chosen one thing to limit, and he chose that. So.
Yeah.
I mean, Luton's threw for 300 yards, 301 yards. It took 45 attempts to get that. So I think you live with that, and you expect that your offense, especially the way they're playing, like, let's not give up big plays. Let's just force them to drive. If they score, they score. And the offense was just controlling the ball completely in the first half. So you just like, the offense will take care of it. You know, if we give up 21, 28 points, we'll be fine.
And that's kind of the attitude that Clancy had after the game when we asked him. He was like, well, they kept just going for the slant. That's something that we didn't see on film coming into this game, but we figured it out. We made adjustments and we lived to see another day. He was pretty much like, yeah, there was some adjustments, but it's not that big of a deal. But when you go on Twitter, everyone's like, ah! So it's the juxtaposition was funny about Clancy.
Yeah, Millie 003 says, seems like they needed to blitz a little more. I don't know. I mean, they were getting pressure with the front four a lot. I don't know if you...
They blitzed more in the first half, and I think some of those were run blitzes intended to try to slow Jefferson. But then, the second half, they started... You know, there were times when they dropped eight guys, and, you know, they just trusted Rector and Tufele and whoever was the third guy to try to get there, and Malik Dort and some other guys. So I think that there was a lot of blitzing in the first half, but in the second half they kind of backed off and they played more coverage, I think.
We can go to questions?
Else are we going to say? It's funny.
Well, that's what I was going to say is, like, how much do you take out of this game? Like, is this just a shrug game where you're like, yeah, it's a win, but, like, how much can you extrapolate from this game? Because USC could go on next week and lose to Cal. Like, how much do you take out of this?
You can usually tell by the questions we get for the podcast, and it was just, like, not as many people calling it. Like, if there's a lot of voicemails, like, it could be a great win. It could be a loss, a disappointing loss. It could be a win you're upset about. This was just kind of a meh. You know, it's like, it's fine. Like, you did what you had to do. Someone tweeted me, that was a really good physical practice. Like, and I thought that was great. Like, that's kind of what that was. That was going to be the most physical practice you were going to get, like, leading up to Cal. So, yeah, it was fine. What do you think? Like,
that's pretty good.
I forget. I'm sorry whoever tweeted that. I retweeted you, but I don't remember who it was. I'm sorry.
I think it was I remember. They have a blue icon. We have a question from Steve who says, has Toa Lobendon's struggles been addressed? Will he move to a new position before the end of the season? We asked Clay Helton about it again at post game. He said Toa only had two bad snaps. He said that they'll get it addressed. He went in and explained again how Toa has changed his hand technique. But Toa is a center. It seems like that's something that's not going to change the rest of the season.
Yeah. It's people tweet me about that. People ask, like, people in the media are like, hey, what's, you know, if they don't follow USC, what's going on with that? I'm like, we've asked Clay Helton. The one time it was direct, like, hey, you're going to replace them. He's like, Toa Lobendon's our center. I don't think he's backing off of that right now. Is it Clay Helton's call or Tim Drevno's call? I believe it's Clay Helton's call. He likes the senior there. Would Brett Nealon do a good job snapping? I think he would, but don't expect that. I don't think that's happening.
And Toa thought he had
felt
really confident.
Did you jinx him with your
interview? It's the shotgun jinx. Last week was Callaway. Next week is Toa.
See, I interviewed Drevno, he gets promoted. So, you know, we're going.
So no one wants to interview him. Thanks a lot, guys. No, he felt very confident going into the game. He said he thought he would have a perfect game, and he had a good line about it. You know, he came back with a tweet and said, "Oh, I guess I jinxed myself." It's something he hears, he knows, he understands. It's something he wants to be perfect at. It's not like he's trying to mess up, obviously. And
that's good.
Really, it was those two snaps. I didn't really see any of the other ones. None of the other ones stood out.
I didn't notice much, but Keeley was saying there was some...
It wasn't as bad as it has been, but there were some where it was all over the place. I think it's hard to tell in the broadcast, but, like, there were some that were offline.
You guys should check out the Peristyle. Keeley put the GIF up there of Toa snaps. It was pretty good.
From last week. I actually thought, even the second snap that JT didn't handle, I thought wasn't that bad of a snap. It was right below the belt, basically. And, he snapped it hard, and JT... didn't get his hands down quick enough to it. So I think there's a little bit of fault there for both of them. What he did differently this week, it looked like, it was there's more velocity on the snaps, it seemed to me. So I think that's a change he made. I think that's a positive because he's not being hesitant with it. So I think it's going to be, it looks like it's improving to me. Whereas earlier, it looked like, oh, this is, something this troublesome and it's not going to be fixed. It looked like it was an improvement in practice in this past game.
I mean, it could have been a disaster. I mean, whoever's fault it was, there was two balls that were on the ground.
Yeah, the fact that JT recovered both of them was pretty miraculous.
Like, if that happens against Cal, that's not happening. And
is that how they score their defensive touchdown? Their defensive player scores
their
touchdown?
They're going to put pressure on you. So you guarantee Tim DeRuiter, the defensive coordinator for Justin Wilcox there, they're going to put a lot of pressure on that exchange and what's going on there. And they're going to, you know, potentially force some turnovers. So that's something that we're going to have to watch this week in practice, because you're talking about a game that might be in the teens instead of in the 30s when you're playing Cal. One turnover like that can crush you. So,
yeah, I mean, as far as keeping Toa at center, it seems like maybe it's a move to get him to the next level. But at what point does it hurt him to stay at center versus maybe guard, where he might have a better showing?
Yeah, I would think he's going to play like guard or something at the next level. I don't think he's going to be a center at the next level, but I don't know. I mean, so is it really helping him, or I don't know. I'm not some NFL expert. I'll ask some of the dudes that we talked to. We talked to some dudes, some scouts, and see what they say. But I would think he'd probably project as a guard.
Yeah.
So maybe playing somewhere. But it, like we said, I don't think that's happening.
David wants to know, what can USC do to get the tight ends more involved in the offense?
Well, I mean, if you throw it to them, that will help.
I knew that was coming. The Ryan classic Ryan troll response.
I don't know. They, like, against Arizona State, they got involved. Josh Fowler was involved, which I like him a lot. I'm not sure. Like, at this point, it is what it is. It's like, is that Shotgun's thing? It is what it is. And
that's Lane Kiffin's thing, but that is barred it for a bit.
I thought you might see more of it this week, especially when you're running the football that well and you can do some. I mean, that's, you know, you run the football well, it's like perfect. You can throw to tight ends. You know, it just seems like that would mesh and just be part of, like, yeah, it's going to work. And you got two backs in a lot. And you could, but nope, didn't happen.
Yeah, they ran some two tight end sets. You know, I saw several of those in the game. You saw probably some three tight end sets as well in the short yardage stuff. So they were in there. I can't really put a lot of fault with any part of the game plan. I mean, they just ran. They should never have thrown the ball to begin with, ever. Just run the ball. Just, you're picking up like 72 yards a carry, basically, is what it felt like at times. So I didn't think you really needed to throw the ball. There was one point where I tweeted, like, I was like, okay, they don't need to throw the ball again. And then they threw like two plays later, and I'm like, what are you doing? I just told you not to throw the ball at all again. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, that's, I did the same thing that someone tweeted me, like, see if it's a play action to Josh Fowler or something that works. And I was like, yeah, don't throw it. Like, there's no need to.
Yeah, I think JT had like 130 or 40 yards at halftime. He ended up with 177. So
yeah, there's no.
Didn't need to throw in the second half at all.
No. And that's when Oregon State went on the run and USC wasn't putting up points, it was like they threw the ball like a whole bunch of times in a row. Not that they can't do it, but it just, we went away from what was working. So. I think the opportunity to do that, though, was it David, was in the first half when you're talking about they were, it was more of a balanced thing. In the second half, it wasn't balanced. It was like, hey, you figured out, like, you're just pounding people. Like,
yeah.
190 yards before contact. Like, that's redonkulous. So, you know.
Yeah, we have a question. We actually got multiple questions about this, which say, what about Dominique Davis for a body in the secondary?
So I've got some of these comments as well as, you know, what about the possibility of Pai Young? What about Dominic Davis? I think
Davis is there, actually. Isn't he practice with the corner still?
Yeah, he's a DB.
He's
on scholarship.
I was going to throw out, and Trayvon Sidney as well. Are the names being tossed out?
Devin Williams.
Dominic Davis is your alternative, but.
Yeah, he's actually there. I totally forgot about him. He's legit, like, in the, like, it's not like move him to secondary. He's in the secondary.
He is, Ryan.
I forgot about him too. But he's there. That is a possibility.
It's not like you corrected. We talked about, like, how many scholarship guys were left. It's not like you corrected
us. I'm reading comments, people.
But no, that's a very good point. Our buddy Michael Castillo would love to see him as
a running back. Heisman contender, Dominic Davis.
But yes, like,
that's his joke that he makes, Shotgun. Oh. You listen to the podcast.
Yeah. It's really, he could play. Like,
he may be forced to.
Yeah.
The thing is. And so with some guys, they're trying to save them with certain, you know, certain amount of games so they can redshirt.
Chase Williams, that was also tossed around in the comments.
Still injured.
He's injured and he moved to safety, but obviously he was at a corner spot. Like, right now, it doesn't really matter what, if, as long as you're at second, you're, you know, you're about that size, you're in the secondary, you play wherever.
Yeah, the positions aren't important right now. If we get getting people healthy is the first thing, and there's a ton of people healthy.
Maybe
Dominic Davis is one. I'm sorry for forgetting that one, but he has not played a snap of cornerback in his career yet. So,
well, that's our buddy Eddie.
I don't think I would have to double check on that one.
What's up, Eddie?
Oh, Eddie. Hey, Eddie. Sorry, Eddie. Didn't recognize you.
Healy doesn't, you know, shouldn't pay.
No, he hasn't. He hasn't played one because he got moved last year. He didn't play at all last year.
Yeah,
his profile picture was small. In my defense. Guys, get your questions in. There's just a lot of comments.
I got some questions.
Go for it, Shoddy.
What's your predictions for the balance of the season? I just like the fact that they're just balanced. It's not just rest of the
balance
season.
Balance in what sense?
The balance of the season, which means the rest of it.
The remainder of the season.
Your balance.
This I believe they're going to be balanced on offense for the balance of the season.
So Clay even said that, you know, I really want to be balanced and stuff, but they ran the ball 44 times and threw it 26, I think, or something like that. So
he wanted to get the flow. Like, he was asked about the play calling and stuff, and he's like, I'm most critical of myself, you know, whatever. But he talked about, like, he wanted to kind of get them in the flow of the game, get the tempo going. And, yeah, I think he did fine. But as far as, like, the balance of the season, I mean, I don't know. That's why we're here. We're trying to figure it out. But, like, the Cal game is pretty important.
I mean, it comes down to next week, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's huge.
Hypothetically, UCLA, they can take care of.
I mean, you saw Oregon State, like, get close, but it really, there was a pretty big difference in talent. Now, I think there's a difference in talent between USC and Cal, but Cal's a well-coached team, and they have to be coached by a guy that Clay Helton fired. So isn't it amazing, like, a cast-off from the Clay Helton staff is now, like, a fairly successful head coach in the Pac-12? You know, props to Justin Wilcox. We've talked about it a million times. I like the staff he's put together. But they're not good on offense, and they're doing some stupid things on offense, and they're getting a lot of public criticism about it. They have Chase Garber as their quarterback, who's not very fleet of foot, and then
Brandon McIlwain.
Yeah, Brandon McIlwain, who's like more of the athlete. McIlwain's committed like 13 turnovers or something and threw one touchdown pass, and they keep putting him into the game like just randomly. Like, it might be it's kind of like if you're a pitcher, like you're a batter, and like you get pinch hit for, and the guy comes in a 2-2 count, and you're like, you expect the guy to do something. They're pulling Garbers out, and then they'll put him in at 3rd and 9 because, like, they run two plays with McIlwain, and you're like, what are you doing? And then I tweeted in the game, so Cal's trying to come back and score, and they put McIlwain in, and I'm like, I tweet, like, Michael Lev, our buddy, talked about, yeah, what is Cal doing? And I said, it's almost like they just want to commit another turnover or something. And then he throws a pick in the end zone. It's like, before, I'm like, this is exactly what they're doing. So it disrupts the offense. It's obvious that it disrupts the offense. And they continue to do it, and I don't know why. So they're brilliant on defense, but the offensive stuff. And they were using 3 quarterbacks at the beginning of the season. They cut it down to 2. But you're going to win with one and not with the other. And I don't know what they're doing. So we'll see if they do that against USC.
It's apt that you bring up that analogy because Brendan McIlwain also plays baseball at Cal. And if he would have went out of baseball, if he would have went out of high school and signed, he probably would have been a 2nd or 3rd round pick.
Really?
Interesting.
So he's a legit dude there. Yeah. So he actually went to South Carolina. The football was the secondary thing. So that, you know, him being a quarterback is a secondary thing, I guess, kind of for him. So he's actually a better baseball player than he is.
Yeah. I think he's okay, but just the way they're using him, it's either, well, you want to play him, play him. Like, if you want the more athletic quarterback, do it. But you're mixing it up, and it's just screwing up your offense, in my opinion. And most everyone on Twitter, too, but it's just kind of crazy.
That is crazy. We have a question, interesting question from Jonathan, who says, what should Clay Helton change in his philosophy if he returns in 2019?
I don't know if he's changing his philosophy. Like, that's his philosophy.
I'm saying, what should he? He should change in physicality.
Yeah.
Practice.
We had a question about this on the podcast too, about it's, and people just want, oh, you want a full tackle every day and stuff, but there's different concepts where, yes, you, I don't think you can have as much contact as what you could back in the Junction Boys days and all that kind of stuff, but you want to tackle, I mean, you want to practice smarter, and I think there's definitely techniques that you can incorporate where it's not going to come off as soft or whatever is kind of you see now. So I think certainly that would be something we've already seen in the end of No Pads November. I think that helps.
Yeah.
But I really feel like upgrading, I don't know if it's philosophy, but upgrading the coaching staff is something that you want to look around the staff and go, these guys could be head coaches. And you're not really looking around the staff and seeing that right now.
Yeah. Surrounding himself with more experience doesn't help or doesn't hurt. I also think implementing more competition in practices. I feel like it's definitely, we know what's going to happen. Scout team kind of is there just to be there. You know, I think if there's more competition, more liveliness in practice, maybe switching it up. Don't stick to a script throughout the whole year. Change it up. I don't know. Things that make people on their toes, players on their toes, so that the competition lives on throughout the season.
Yeah. No, I like that. That'd be...
Shotgun?
More competition is always good, and you know that would lead to, or physicality would lead to that more. Yeah. I mean, Clay's even gone. He tried to be, you know, have more competition as far as, you know, last 2 years when there would be some fisticuffs back and forth, he would stop the whole team and they'd have to do up-down stuff. This year it was like, well, as long as it's just two guys going at each other, it's fine. I like to see that competition. Like, he changed that. That was something he changed. Yeah. But and their week, what was it called?
Mock game week
was terrific. It was fantastic. And if they would have continued that, I mean, that's why you go to No Pads November, because you've had weeks like this for 3 months now. But that there's no use in doing No Pads November if you haven't been hitting all the time. Now, I understand they have a ton of injuries. And we've talked about it before, is the question becomes, is your body prepared for the contact when you don't have any contact in practice and stuff? You know, having a tackle period once a day is not a bad thing. You practice your tackling, you practice avoiding those tackles. I know the quarterbacks can't do that. Then you can bring out the yellow jerseys for guys that, you know, they're limited or whatever it may be. Hey, we don't want to tackle this guy to the ground. He's got a bad shoulder. Whatever it is, you can do that or keep those guys out. But you should still have those type of periods at least once a day. Would not be bad. More physicality is never a bad thing in football.
For any Periscope super users out there, there's some weird stuff going on. We're getting like repeat questions. It's like they're bots, but they're like really specific questions, like what is Dan Weber, different ways of asking what Dan Weber eats for breakfast. So I'm just like, I don't know what's going, like, this is very strange. Like, different people and like the same questions.
The bots are taking over.
I don't know, but they're like, but they're not, they're smart questions. So it's not just like
USC
random
football bots.
Yeah, it's very specific. If you guys know Periscope, or let us know someplace else, but it's kind of interesting.
Daniel says, does USC even have a chance to win against Notre Dame?
Yeah,
because I don't think Notre Dame's that great. I mean, they're not. They were much better a few years ago when they were in the national championship contention, and USC was right in that game.
Yeah.
I don't think they're the fourth best team in the country.
I mean, but they beat Michigan, and Michigan looks like really
good. Beat Michigan
right
the very
now.
First game,
yeah.
And people were like, Harbaugh needs to be fired, and then Michigan's offense got better
because
they were playing a first-time quarterback. That's the thing. All the teams at the top right now are playing first-time quarterbacks. First four teams. So Michigan, Alabama, Clemson, and Notre Dame all have first-year starters at quarterback.
No, certainly there's a chance. I mean, USC has a very talented roster, and – we were talking about this like off the air, like can easily make the Rose Bowl. Like, you'll probably play Washington State. You've already beat. You should probably beat Cal and UCLA. You know, easily Utah and Arizona State can lose a game. So, I mean, the path to the Rose Bowl is not like, you know.
It's crazy.
It's not like going through Fallujah or something. Like, you can, you know, it's like a stroll through Iowa at this point. Like, you can just like, oh, that's fine. What was that movie, Stripes, where they're like attacking, I don't know, whatever. We won't get all that stuff. That's an old reference. And I'm not even getting it right. But yeah, no, certainly it's capable of doing that. And if you could, there's a little cherry on top if you could actually beat Notre Dame too. But I do think Notre Dame's legit. I think you'll take a really good effort from USC. Like, what you saw against Oregon State, like that sort of effort, I don't think you're going to beat Notre Dame. But you can play up to your potential and beat Notre Dame. But we haven't seen USC really do that. Certainly not for four quarters.
Mike Rust says, why can't they get Palaiea Naioteote on the field more often?
So Palaiea Naioteote was benched the game before.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason why he wasn't on the game this game. When your all-conference, potential All-American senior comes back, captain at the linebacker spot, comes back, has led you in tackles for 3 years, he's going to go back in that spot. So... And John Houston's been playing, you know, it's probably played his best string of games, three games set.
He probably had the best defensive play in that game.
In that game, he was really good again in the Colorado game. So he's been playing pretty well. I don't know where you want to put him. Now, maybe you can put him on the edge and pass rush some, like they did a little bit in that Washington State game. But then I think you're just trying to get him in the game instead of trying to get him in. And Clancy was asked, you know, will he move to a different position? He's like, no, he's going to stay at that position. Next year he's going to take over Cam Smith's spot. So they want him there learning that spot. And the thing is, if he had a really good game against Arizona State, they might be trying to find a way for him in. But when you struggle in a game, and that's what happens. Freshmen struggle, and then teams say, okay, let's attack that guy. That's what happens. So, no, they're not going to put him out there just to get him reps and have other teams attack him again. He's got to improve in practice, and then, you know, if there's an injury or whatever it may be, he'll get on that in that regard.
I would like to see, and I think we had a question on the podcast I did with Harvey Hyde today about he went from playing, like, all the snaps to, like, none, right? Or did he have any? Or so, you know, could he go in there for a series or two for Cam Smith to take Cam Smith? Who, Cam Smith's coming off an injury. Can you get him off the field for a series or two? Like, wouldn't that make more sense? You don't have to bench him or whatever, but just to, he got benched, sure, but can he come in for four or five plays? I probably could, and I don't think he did.
I mean, this is what I petitioned for, I guess. You know, I was trying to start a petition for Levi Jones last year. You know, they need, those guys do need snaps to develop.
Yes.
So giving them a series or two series or subbing in two plays here just to give a guy a break, that type of thing, I'm all for. There's been a lot of, this is not directed just at you guys, but there's been a lot of talk about Palaye Naidoo, why is he not in there? Well, because he didn't play very well the last game. And they have a senior coming back. That's why he's back in the game.
But Mike, they like him a lot. Why he played as much as he did. I don't know why it's a feast or famine, though. I don't know why it's like Cam's back, let him play a series or two. It's fine. I mean, give Cam a rest. I mean, he deserves some rest. He's coming off injuries and everything. He had a knee and a hamstring. So, yeah, I don't get that. So that's the call we got. Listen to the Peristyle podcast with Harvey Hyde. The voicemail, he was really upset. A lot about development. Like, why won't he rotate more guys? You got to get the young guys in and develop. But when you're forced to, like the secondary, everyone's going to play. But he'd like to see more people get developed and stuff. And, you know, that would be a great spot for him to come in. And you know, help them try to shut down the run, but they didn't do it.
Not that it really matters, but I was curious why Jack Sears didn't play the last like 2 minutes just to hand the ball off. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, there were some tweets about that too. USC's really been horrible about getting quarterbacks in and stuff. Like, and even when you get a lead, but usually it's like, well, because they had a lead, but it didn't look that good, so it's not like just like pounding the crap out of somebody. But even then, when you get to the point where you could have put him in, like for whatever reason, USC's not really good at doing that.
It's just like if you're coming off a game where Talanoa Hufanga got hurt on the last defensive play, like do you want to protect guys just to make sure? I don't know. And like I said, it's not that big of a deal. I was just curious. We have a question from Matthew who says, what's the general vibe with recruiting? Is there any rumbling going on because of the coaching staff?
Yeah, we got a lot of recruiting questions, too, on the Periscope thing. Not really a recruiting show, but no, I mean, we've talked about this in the past. Recruiting will be fine as long as, if the product of the field is okay, like, I don't think that's going to be a real big deal. Recruits look at it very differently than fans do, but USC could very well win the South. I mean, I think all the things are coming out. Now, losing to, like, UCLA, that could swing some momentum with some of the local guys and stuff. Losing badly to Notre Dame is not going to be a great look. So it's not like super impacted and everything so far. It's not like people are like jumping ship or whatever. But the coaching uncertainty could, you know, have some sort of impact. So I think when Lynn Swann comes out and gives his vote of confidence, that's probably in an effort to help with recruiting. Keeley mentions the early signing period. So I don't know what you think. I think it's like, it's not, you know, you go out to these high school games and stuff. It's not like people are forgetting about USC or anything.
Yeah.
So wouldn't be a huge concern.
Any other questions from Periscope or YouTube you guys want?
Mealy 003, you guys think Jack Sears will stick around? It's like if he didn't leave before when he was third string and now he's playing some and looks good, I don't think he's leaving now.
It makes more sense for him to stick another year, get his degree, and then be a graduate transfer. Because otherwise, if he transfers, he's going to have to sit out a year. So why not just stay, get your degree, and then do that?
Plus, it's easier to learn one system and then go somewhere else rather than try to transfer, learn a system, and depending on the situation, you can then be a grad transfer and then learn a third system. So there's some things there with that. Jasper asked, do you think Helton would be fired if USC would have blew a 21-0 lead against a bad Oregon State team?
I think I don't think you can come back from that.
That might be tough to come back from.
I don't think there's a tarmac, but I think that goes into the whole folder of. Ugh.
That's an icky. That would be an icky loss, especially with a 21-point lead.
Guys, the answer is it doesn't matter because it didn't happen. It's hypothetical. True. Hypothetically right. Dumb. You also don't need to ask about it. Who's going to be the coach? Because there still is one until there isn't one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm avoiding the coach hypothetical questions.
So let's just answer all those coach questions for you guys.
Yeah.
About Harbaugh, John Harbaugh. And, probably every other name that Ryan will be like, oh, God, why did you say that?
Jim really wants you to talk about the possibility of Lane Kiffin coming back. I didn't make this up. He's been asking about it.
What?
I feel like that's just a troll. It's a bad question.
Lane's a better coach. Yeah, it's a bad question.
Smack him down and then we move on.
He's a better coach now than he was before, but no, USC shouldn't have hired him. They certainly shouldn't hire him now, and they don't have an opening. Molly the Pit won. Is John Baxter the best special teams coach SC can get? Well, Clayton he thanked God again today for John Baxter. So Oregon State ran, that was just stupid.
Why?
It didn't even look like a fake.
It was dumb. Like, they should have just either gone for it, and then they ran the ball on like third. It was dumb. That was like one of the worst Oregon State offensive sequences in the game, if not the worst. But then they ran some horrible looking fake field goal, and USC just backed up into a defense. And
the best part was like Cam Smith's like, he's like making signals like being like, no, there's something wrong here. Yeah. It's like everybody just played regular defense.
But on the conference call, Clay Helton praised John Baxter for. So I think special teams have been better for sure. There was some really
definitely turned things around since the Texas game. I mean, they had the one the punt return by N'Keal Harry, very nice play by him, but. The rest of it, the punters are actually kicking much better. Even though Reed Budrovich did have a 23-yard punt leading into their 2-minute drive, but it was still inside the 20. The punters are doing much better. Michael Brown has come on as your backup and has been really good as a field goal kicker. I mean, he's missed one, I think. Their coverage units have been pretty good. They've returned a punt for a touchdown. They've blocked field goals. I mean, they've completely 180'd the season from after that Texas game where they gave up the biggest play. They allowed a drive to continue with a really bad penalty. They've had a couple penalties, but not as many penalties as they were getting to.
Yeah, so. I don't know if they got I think it's been every game, but I don't know if they got one against Oregon State. They've every time there's always a special teams penalty, but they might not have got one against Oregon State.
It had been they did. Every single.
Oh, they did?
I believe they did. I remember.
It had been every single game until the Texas game, and then I hadn't tracked it since.
Yeah, then, no, so. I think everyone since then too. It's been, but yeah, no. Clay Helton is a big John Baxter fan. So after the season, if you're expecting, I don't know. We don't know how many changes he's going to make. Would that be one of them? I don't know. But I feel like he's going to have to make some coaching changes, barring a run to the Rose Bowl again, which we talked about is actually possible for sure.
I mean, it could happen, guys. If Oregon plays well, USC could, and USC's. This was a turning point. Their offensive line plays better. They build on this last game. USC could be in the Rose Bowl easily.
Yeah.
And they could somehow win it. They find a way. And then if that happens, Clay Helton has now won 2 Pac-12 championships and 2 Rose Bowls in 3 years. And he's not going anywhere for you guys.
The problem would be, though, if making the Rose – I think getting to the Rose Bowl is realistic. But it's also realistic that you get to the Rose Bowl and get thumped by Notre Dame and then get thumped in the Rose Bowl. And
so are you going to get thumped in the Rose Bowl? Because if Michigan ends up in the Final Four, then they're
Ohio
not
State
going to be
or
there.
Penn State or someone.
Yeah, Ohio State. Penn State but, you beat. Ohio State is not as good this year.
You're talking about a team that has the same kind of athletes, same caliber of athletes as USC, and that's where USC doesn't do very well.
And it could all not come true. I mean, because they need a lot to happen. They need Oregon to play really well.
That's the problem,
though,
is that you could find a way to beat. All you got to do is beat 2 fairly bad teams, and you're going to go. And Utah's lost their quarterback, Tyler Huntley, so they're likely going to lose a game. Arizona State, I mean, really impressed with what Herm Edwards was able to do, but certainly they could lose to Oregon. Now, Oregon got thumped by Arizona by 30 points or something, but
really
it's
weird.
The Pac-12 is just bonkers. So to talk about, this is going to happen, you have no idea. USC could lose their next 2 games, they could win their next 2 games. We don't know, but there's a lot of possibilities there. Where were we? I don't even remember what we're talking
People
about.
Are saying, are you really talking about the Rose Bowl right now?
It's a possibility. That's why it's like, so crazy that it's a possibility. Yeah. It tells you how bad the Pac-12 South is as a group.
It's the Pac-12 is god-awful right now. That's why I think whoever goes could get thumped. Now, Washington State looks legit, but USC beat Washington State. You know, like, it's crazy, the Pac-12. I mean, I follow because I do the Podcast of Champions. If you like Pac-12 football, go check out the Podcast of Champions. Me and David Wood, so USC-UCLA perspective on this stuff. But I follow it way closer than I really should. And I watch all these games, and I pick all the games against the spread. And it's just nuts to go from week to week. I'm 500, perfect even record for the last 4 weeks. And I'm way above 500 normally. But just every week, everything changes. It's like Cal scores 49. Cal can't score at all. Arizona, you know, pounds Oregon. UCLA wins a couple games, and they get smashed. It's crazy. Yeah, Washington doesn't give up a defensive touch, doesn't give up a touchdown on defense and loses to Cal. Like, it's insane.
It's crazy.
It's true.
It's crazy.
That's all true.
And Herm Edwards doing amazing stuff.
The interesting thing is that
Nikhil Harry's doing amazing
stuff. Say USC gets back to the Pac-12 championship. They play Washington State. Mike Leach has kind of created this, like, PR campaign around the whole officiating scandal.
Yes.
So much so that on ESPN, they were like, oh, well, the one loss to USC, there was controversy on that. But the controversy was on the JT Daniels targeting call. It wasn't on the Port Augustine. So it's just interesting
but how... But the Port Augustine one happened after, and then they're wondering, like, hey, did someone make a phone call
on
that?
I agree, but yeah. The official, like, controversy was on the JT Daniels call. But it's just interesting the PR campaign that Mike Leach has successfully created.
Well, he named, was it Willie Dixon?
Woody Dixon,
yeah. I mean, he named him in, like, his press conference after the game. He knew what the heck was going on with that. So for the Pac-12 to say this is a one-time incident, like, there's no freaking way. That never would have made it into a report if it was a one-time thing. The only reason that those words were written down is because I'm tired of this happening.
Yeah.
100%. Like,
crazy.
Bet anything on that.
Speaking of betting, if the odds were plus 10,000 to have to not have another bad snap for the rest of the season, Jasper asked, would you take that bet? A $1,000 bet would net you $100,000.
Wait.
What?
What? So?
Would you bet very good odds?
1,000 to 1 odds.
Yeah, 1,000 to 1 odds. 10,000 to 1 odds.
Repeat the whole thing again?
If the odds were 10,000 to 1 to not have another bad snap for the rest of the season, would you take that bet?
No.
$1,000 bet can net you $100,000.
I mean, I might bet like $10.
Yeah, $10. I'm knowing. I mean,
yeah, I would do that, but I wouldn't want to spend more than $10 because I know that I'm not getting that back.
Don't bet the farm on that.
No. Sean, I would bet a small amount to get to win a lot, but yeah.
Sean asked, the play calling seemed a lot better, And then Ron, to couple with that, how much of the impressive line play was Drevno and how much was an outmatched opponent? I think a lot of it was the
Oregon State.
You could dominate Oregon State, but they did some different things. I think they actually, you know, widened their splits a little bit. You know, the fact that they were able to get out in space and block some guys, that's an improvement. That's some positive vibes. Yeah. Can they continue that going forward? That's the question.
Yeah, you got. I mean, I think everything was good, but it's like you just don't know. You'll know next week.
Robert says, based on what you saw on Saturday night, are you at all concerned about Cal and UCLA?
Certainly about Cal because of the defense. Like, that's...
I mean, yeah. This wasn't a performance where USC had all their ducks in a row and everything looked perfect. So... Yeah.
Watch Cal play. Like, they are legit as far as defense goes. I mean, you got Jake Browning as, you know, Washington's all-time leading everything. And I know he's not that great. I don't think Miles Gaskin ended up playing that game. He came back.
That's a big part.
You know, he came back for this last game against Stanford, right, where they got the win. But... yeah, this is a defense that, I mean, Gardner Minshew has been slicing and dicing and crushing people. He didn't get the 20 points at home, you know. This is so you don't hold Washington State under 20 points unless you're doing something right. They're doing a lot of things right. So this USC offense is going to have to play a lot better, and they're going to have to sustain drives like they did against Oregon State. But you can't just hand the ball off on 3rd and 15. Or 3rd and 16, and get 15 yards. Like, that's not going to happen against Cal. It's going to have to be scheme. It's going to have to be – you're going to see the play calling. It's going to have to be really good. And you're going to have to try to put guys in position to win, not just, here's the ball, athletes go out and just crush people. Like, it's not going to happen.
So the key is going to be red zone efficiency because Justin Wilcox, his style has always been bend but don't break. I know USC people hated it when he was at USC. He's not being aggressive enough. He would, you know, some games he would never blitz. I remember that conversation. Yeah. You know,
Sark loved me for that.
Yeah, so we charted all the blitzes to see if they were blitzing.
Wow, TBT, I forgot about that.
So, you know, they weren't blitzing at all. They're basically just playing back and, you know, and making teams drive the field. That's what USC's going to have to do. That's what USC's not good at. So that is a concern. But they also did come off of a game that had 18-play drive and 11-play drive for a touchdown. So I think there's some positives to take from the Oregon State game, but can you take a lot from it? No. Are you concerned with Cal and UCLA? I'm still not concerned, though.
You weren't concerned with Arizona State either.
Yeah, I don't.
You haven't shown a lot of concern. You're like, they'll cover the spread every time. They did cover the spread. Okay.
Yeah. I said they would blow them out.
Yeah. Props to Oregon State. They covered the spread. So with the spread, I think it'll be at like 16.5, and they won by 17. So
Arizona State's still not that good.
They're in the driver's seat.
N'Keal Harry is the good. It's the only one.
Good.
He's the only one.
I thought Manny Wilkins was going to come back and play better. He played better. Eno Benjamin is one of the best running backs in the conference.
Benjamin, I was very impressed with him. It's the first time I've seen him since the high school all-star game. So I was impressed with him.
Yeah.
And I was already impressed with N'Keal Harry. So I'm impressed with two players on their team.
Do you want to know what you're smoking, Chuck? Then? We've reached the top of the hour. If you want to get some rapid fire questions in before we wrap it up, we have a question from Eddie, who says, what is T. Martin's role now that he isn't calling plays?
Recruiting, wide receivers, and
he's
still
the eye in the sky.
Yeah, he's helping out from the press box. He's still involved in all the offensive meetings. It's not just about who calls the play. It's, you know, they have to come up with a game plan every week. So he's involved in all that.
Yeah, so they should be using his same scripts that he was using at the beginning of games, too, because those were very successful so far this year. If we went against Bama or LSU, what would the score be?
Not pretty. Well, LSU, so LSU's defense would do some damage, but LSU, their offense isn't that great.
Yeah, they would score like 23 points.
But Bama would be like it was couple
50
years
to
ago.
6? That sounds like a good score.
Yeah.
That seems familiar.
Shrink. This is a real question. Why don't we dump the shotgun, especially with the snap problems? They did some under center, right?
They did.
But that's just the philosophy of this offense. So that's not – if people – that's like asking, why don't they run the I formation? Because that's not what they do. So it's a shotgun, pistol, mostly driven offense.
Yeah, Corey asks a similar question. Should they line up in more center to help the snaps in the run game? The other thing, though, with the shotgun is that it helps a quarterback. Now, if the snap is there, it gives them an opportunity to quickly examine the field rather than worrying about their steps as they're retreating, which is something you have to worry about more. When you do play action and stuff, you can still keep your eyes down the field. That's why you can do the RPO stuff versus, you know, classic power eye. I remember David Green at Georgia was the winningest SEC quarterback when he left school. He was really good at just turning his back completely, and he would have the ball in his midsection. And it's very dangerous because if someone's coming off the edge, you can get destroyed. But he would fake it, and he would have the ball in his gut, and then he would slowly turn around, and there'd be somebody wide open because of how well he would fake it. But that's like you're not looking at the defense at all. With the young quarterback, you want to give them as much opportunity as possible to read the defense as quickly as possible. So I think the shotgun helps with that. But you got to get the snap to them. They got, you know, especially right. If the snap is where it should be in the target area, then you're being able to scan the field without looking at the snap as well, so that would help us.
Yeah, part of the advantage of having being in the shotgun, you lose if the snap is,
yes,
you know.
That's what I'm trying to say in a long-winded way.
Anthony says, we also got another question about this. Would you run Oxetic Ware 75% now that he's shown how good he is? Also, will he get a super majority of snaps now that Carr is out?
Yes. You'll see 70-30. I mean, I think that's what you'll see with Vi.
I don't have any issue with the distribution of carries so much. I mean, it's been fine, you know.
It's been okay. Sometimes it's like a guy's running really well, and you're like, well, we got to get.
Yeah, I don't like that. But in this game, I was like, oh, they run the ball pretty good, and, you know.
Yeah, I think it'll be 60-40 to 7-30 somewhere.
Yeah. Thanks, Anthony.
Augustine wants to know why you're wearing a Rams hat, Shotgun.
I'm not wearing a Rams hat.
Ryan?
Oh, yes. I'm not a huge Rams. I'm more of a Steeler fan, but I did have, like, my buddies and I had season tickets the first year, and I bought this hat. But I went golfing yesterday and I played really well and I was going again today, so I wore it again.
Lucky hat.
And I had the best round of my life, so it was good.
Jasper asked, are there no hotel accommodations in Corvallis? Why did the team stay in Eugene?
They didn't have enough hotels.
Oh.
And the thing is, never stay in a college town at the hotels in a college town if possible. Stay in a larger city close to it. Because there's much more chance of antics and fire alarms going off at 3 a.m. if you're staying in Starkville or you're staying in Oxford versus, you know, I'm using Mississippi and there's not any real big cities there. You go to Jackson, I guess, there. But you don't stay in Athens when you can stay in Atlanta you know, that type of thing. You stay outside of, you know, where there's going to be college pranks and stuff potentially happening.
Gotcha. We have one. Who has been the offensive and defensive MVPs?
Michael Pittman.
This season. I think Pittman?
Yeah. He's still.
I feel like first half Amon-Ra, second half Pittman.
What about Cedric Ware?
He's close, but no. Still Pittman.
All right. How about defensive?
Cam Smith. Given the difference we've seen without him.
Porter Gustin.
Yeah, I
mean, we've seen without.
Okay, cheating. Sure.
Those guys. I mean, Evon Marshall, you could say.
True.
Well, Marvell Tell, the difference without him, too.
Yeah, it's true.
It's almost the, like it's when you have senior defensive players that have started for 3 or 4 years.
They're
and
good.
You lose them, it's not as good.
Yeah.
It's weird, huh? Or when you have 3 defensive captains, you play without them, you don't play as well on defense.
We had a question.
Which is why I don't think Arizona State's that good again.
Whatever. We had a question about any potential red shirts that we're excited to see in the future.
Let me think.
Justin
Beach
and Brett
Nealon.
They look good.
Yeah, Brett Nealon. So Nealon won't redshirt, right? Or
he's only played like 2 games. Oh, I
didn't need a redshirt. He redshirted last year.
True. Never.
Oh, okay.
That.
So he wouldn't be. So guys that are going to redshirt. McLean, like he had the blow up play on.
Elijah Winston.
I'm sorry, it was Elijah Winston that had that really good.
Yeah, he's really come on late in the season. He's played the last 2 games. He also blew up an offensive lineman last week in practice and had his entire defensive group yelling. Caleb Trimbley, a guy we haven't seen in a while.
Yeah, he's been
hurt
of
injury.
Like, the whole time.
So he's another guy. Isaac Taylor Stewart, Elijah Griffin's already past the redshirt point, but Isaac Taylor Stewart is right at the threshold, so I doubt he'll be back for any more games. So those are a couple guys that stand at Dedich. I really like him. I think
he's
going to continue to get better.
He'll fight with for Nealon for sure at the center spot, but he's just a nasty dude. Like, he'll be fun to watch.
His competitive fire is good.
It's legit.
Needed in this team. Dark horse candidate Caleb Trimbley. When he's actually healthy, I think he'll be. Yeah. Oh, you did? Sorry, I was reading comments again. My bad.
That's hard. So, yeah.
Any final questions?
More than we should.
Probably. We're past 8.
Is a lot of negative. Beckstein has a lot of negative questions. How bad will the Notre Dame game get? Will Helton be gone if USC wins 2 of the next 3, or they lose one of the next ones? So do you foresee Clay present if he loses just one of the next 3 games? Yes, he'll be present if they go 2-1.
We're gonna just talk about the team right now. Like, you know,
Chet, somebody asked, imagine the secondary if Biggie actually went to the NFL draft net last year.
Ooh.
That'd be very
That's
thin.
A great point.
And team used to be great. You asked what happened to Elijah Griffin. He has a shoulder injury. He did practice some last week, but he has not come back.
He did not travel with them for the trip,
so he was not available for that. Mandy asked, do you think he'll get significant playing time when he returns? If everyone else is still hurt, then that's the guy going
get,
in.
He should get some reps. Talanoho Funga actually did make the trip.
He did.
So that's cool.
So did Porter, right?
Porter did. He's scooting around.
Yeah, he's from Corvallis, so it's obviously a bummer for him to get hurt. That, you know, he could have played in front of all his friends and family and everything. But
another popular guy was Marlon Tuipulotu from Independence, Oregon. He had a lot of like friends, family on the sideline that he was talking to before the game.
Actually, from LA, they moved to Oregon, went to school up there, and moved back because his little brother is at Lawndale. Went and saw him.
Oh.
So, and since you asked about, or said Hufanga, somebody asked, Crazy T asked, how was Hufanga's replacement? Which would be a Jenna Harris.
He's been good.
Fine.
Yeah. I thought it was, I think he was, he had to kind of do a lot of the calls, I think, when Marvell Tell was out. But now he's just kind of complimenting Tell, and Tell can continue to do his thing. So, yeah, I mean, it helps having an experienced guy there.
It seemed like, and I'll dive into this more when I rewatch the game closer, seemed like they used Ajene as the one high safety more than Marvell.
Yeah. Then,
which is interesting because, now granted, Marvell can blitz if you move him down in the slot to guard a guy, so that gives you more options there, and I think he's a much better blitzer than Ajene is just because of his size and strength. But
Harris's cover skills, right?
Yeah. I know. You would think that you would leave Marvell up top and you know, move Ajene down in the nickel when you have to, you know, when you have to spread out the safeties that way. So I'll look at that more, but that was kind of interesting to me. We'll see if that's actually the case. Last 2 I got is, what happened to tight end number 88? That would be Daniel Amorebebe. He's been cleared medically. He is not comfortable enough to play, so we've not seen him. He's not practiced in a long, long time.
Yeah.
And if Clay stays, will they keep Pendergast? I would think so, because Clay went out of his way to try to go get Clancy Pendergast.
Yeah. That would be, unless he, you know,
unless they're giving up 500, 600 yards a game. Yeah,
it's we don't know what's going to happen. So it depends how the season ends and all that kind of stuff. I anticipate some shakeup on the staff. I wouldn't put him as one of the first guys that would be let go, but, you know, who knows? I don't think that would happen.
Especially if you're thinking about potentially overhauling the offense. I don't think you want to do both.
Yeah.
Maybe some shakeups on the defense, but you don't want to get rid of your scheme after you have guys who've been in it for a while.
You might get a position coach or two on the defensive side, but on the offensive side, potential, like Keeley said, it could be bring in a new offensive coordinator with their own offense. Like, that's that would be my preference, but, you know. We should probably wrap it up. Or you got one more?
People want bold predictions.
Those are the worst. I hate a lot of things.
And with the way the Pac-12 is this year, there's no clarity. So it could still be anywhere from, I think they could still go to the Vegas Bowl all the way to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
And that's almost
the range.
That is like the full gamut of the Pac-12. Right. I don't know what their worst bowl is, but I think the Vegas Bowl is one above it, right?
Yeah.
I think it's the next to last.
Yeah, it's Cheez-It Bowl. Okay.
Names? The Cheez-It Bowl, the Red Box Bowl.
It's called sponsorship.
Shotgun.
But people I respect, like Stuart Mandel does a lot of bowl predictions every week, and it's like it's so pointless because you have no idea what's gonna happen. It's just And with the Pac-12, there's different each bowl. There's some that can select if you have the same record. You can select up or down. Like, there's a lot of rules to project at this point, I think, makes zero sense. Because, like Shotgun said, it could be anything.
Which one would you want to go to?
Okay, so Vegas is good because you get it out of the way. It's early. As far as, like, personally, like, covering it, you don't have to, like, it's not Christmas or, you know.
I would like that.
Yeah, there's some of those. I mean, obviously, the Rose Bowl is awesome. It's local. New Year's Day.
And it's fun.
And it's fun. It's fun to cover that one. So I would rather be on the extremes. Like, instead of, like, I don't want to go to El Paso, you know, stuff like that. Some of the I forgot. I looked up all the dates of what they were. And there's, like, a bunch of them on the same day.
On the same day? And yeah. Two of them at the same time. So, like, good job, Pac-12. Yeah, good job, Larry Scott. Good job. Once again. Earning that $4 million.
You have, like, 2 weeks to do these. And you put two of them at the exact same time.
Well, that's like Dan and I were stuck in UCLA Oregon traffic trying to make it to Corvallis. We were like, thanks, Pac-12, for scheduling both LA teams and Oregon at the same time. Alrighty. We're ending it on a...
I would have said the Cheez-It Bowl or the Emerald Bowl or what it was.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to...
If they would have stayed in AT&T Park. That was kind of an interesting, fun dynamic there.
So where is it
And
now?
You're in San Francisco. And you're in Santa Clara at Levi's. Nobody there.
No, Levi's.
Yeah. You're not in San Francisco to have fun.
Sorry, I got to go.
All right, we'll get there. We're flying into San Jose. All right, we're flying out of San Jose. Cool, we're done.
But there's a lot of balls in the air right now. Just juggling, you know. The Pac-12 turns itself on its head every week.
Cannibalism.
Yeah.
Pac-12.
Every team in the Pac-12 has at least 3 conference losses except Washington State.
It's crazy.
It's good.
So.
And Washington State's now, what, 6th or 7th, 8th? So where are they at now?
They're still, I believe.
Oh, they were 8th in the playoff. Western and then the playoff thing won't come out till Tuesday. So I don't know what they were in the AP. I didn't see that.
I think they moved up in the top 10. They were already in the top 10 last week, so I think they moved up a couple spots.
Okay.
Let's see. Alrighty. But this is why you should stay tuned. Pac-12, you never know. You never know what's going to happen.
It's craziness.
Craziness. We'll be previewing Cal USC on Thursday at noon. So tune into that. But that's Shotgun Spratling. That's Ryan Abraham. I'm Keely Orr. Thanks for tuning in. We went a little bit later than usual this time, so thanks for sticking around.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys later this week.
And Tuesday, USC basketball starts.
Oh, true.
We will not be talking about that on television. Maybe after the football season, but until then, no.
We'll see. Alrighty. That's going to wrap it up. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.